Radio Prague News.
More potential candidates have emerged for the post of chairman of the Social Democrats. The number of long-term users of intravenous drugs in the Czech Republic rose last year. And Tomáš Berdych has made it into the third round of tennis's Paris Masters, increasing his chances of reaching the season-ending World Tour Finals. More potential candidates have emerged for the post of chairman of the Social Democrats. Acting leader Bohuslav Sobotka and Michal Hašek announced their candidatures soon after the resignation of former chair Jiří Paroubek in May. They have now been joined by Martin Pecina, who has already received one nomination, while Lubomír Zaorálek told one of Wednesday's newspapers he was considering standing. And the party's recent candidate for Prague mayor, Jiří Dienstbier Jr., said he wouldn't rule out running for the position. It will be decided by delegates at a Social Democrats conference in March. And the Social Democrats, who finished first in general elections in May, would again win if a vote was held now, suggests a new SANEP poll. Some 29.3% of respondents in the internet-based survey said they would cast their ballots for the party. The poll indicates that top 09 would finish second with 18.7%, just shading their rivals on the right, the Civic Democrats. The Communists would finish fourth on 13.7%, followed by Public Affairs on 8.3%, while the Christian Democrats would return to the lower house with 5.7% support, the survey suggests. The number of regular long-term users of intravenous drugs in the Czech Republic rose by 5,000 to 37,500 last year, according to government figures. The data is based on the estimates of experts in the field and was released on Wednesday in an annual report by the National Drug and Drug Addiction Monitoring Centre. Around two-thirds of the country's heavy drug users consume methamphetamine, with the rest taking heroin, the survey said. 49 drug deaths were recorded last year. The Czech tennis player Tomáš Berdych has made it into the third round of the Paris Masters, after beating France's Florent Serroux 6-3, 6-1 in only 47 minutes on Tuesday evening. That result increases Berdych's chances of reaching the prestigious season-ending World Tour Finals in London. The competition features the top eight players of the year, and the 25-year-old currently occupies sixth spot. His compatriot Radek Štěpánek is also into the third round in Paris, following a 7-6, 6-4 over Nicolas Almagro of Spain. And finally now, a quick look at the weather. We can expect rain over the next couple of days, with temperatures reaching a maximum of 13 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby. You'll find more stories at radio.cz. But for now, that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, broadcasting from the Czech capital. My name is Jan Richter. In today's show, solar power companies vow to fight back against government measures to curb photovoltaic power boom. We look at new legislation that will affect foreign residents in the Czech Republic. And later, increasing numbers of fortune hunters flock to South Bohemia in search of the rare stone called Moldavite. All that and more coming your way, so please stay tuned. Czech lawmakers have taken a big step to put a lid on the country's solar power boom. The lower house has voted through a package of taxes hitting solar companies and power producers to curb electricity price rises next year. Chris Johnstone reports on the vote and reactions.
A massive last-minute lobbying campaign by solar power companies and demonstration in front of Parliament could not prevent the worst for solar power companies on Tuesday. A three-pronged set of measures comprising a 26% tax on solar power firms for the next 3 years, 32% tax on free carbon emissions in 2011 and 2012, and tax on agricultural land used for solar panels was voted through the lower house unscathed. Prime Minister Petr Nečas and other top members of the government stepped out after the victory and said the measures would keep electricity rises next year below 5.5%. Without them, they said households would have faced rises of 12% and industry of 18% in 2011. But solar power companies say the changes have undermined their business and investments, often based on bank loans. Mikhail Gardner is manager of the power company Photon Energy, which has around a dozen ongoing solar power projects in the country.
The effect will be quite dramatic, actually, in the first 3 years. We will have to either renegotiate the loan agreements that we have with the banks, or we're going to have to cough up some extra money, which we'll have to put into the power plant, so increase the equity.
He says Photon's solar business will be loss-making, but it can survive if cash is transferred from other parts of the company. But other firms might not be so lucky and could hit the wall. Mr. Gartner also says the Czech government is likely to face a challenge to its latest moves at the European Commission in Brussels for abruptly changing the rules.
The indications that we have from EPIA, from the European Photovoltaic Industry Association, are very clear in this respect, and they will take it to the European Commission. And I think they will be successful because it's a retroactive step, and it's singling out the investor and saying that he's responsible for the increase in the electricity price.
In a similar case, he says the Commission challenged similar steps attempted by Spain after it tried to snuff out a solar power boom. And local legal companies are also bracing themselves for a spate of arbitration cases being launched by Czech and foreign solar power companies, claiming that the government has broken investment protection treaties. One legal company advising solar power companies says it expects the government will, in the long term, have to pay out more in compensation to those companies once the arbitration rulings start rolling in than it collected from the new taxes. The Sun is not likely to set soon on this case.
Chris Johnston with that report. Now, in response to directives from the European Commission, the lower house of Parliament has passed new legislation regarding the employment and residence of foreigners in the Czech Republic. Foreign residents will be required to have sufficient health insurance, and their residency permits will have to have biometric information, such as fingerprints. Also, foreigners facing deportations will be able to request an asylum hearing. To find out more about the new bill and what it will mean for foreigners in the Czech Republic, Radio Prague's Christian Falvey spoke to Lucie Sládková, who heads the International Organization for Migration.
Well, the amendment has 380 paragraph change, so I cannot go in details. The important thing is, for example, that there is the directive implemented which will say that the responsibility for the work of migrants will be on the employer, which means that he or she will be punished if illegal work is going to be performed by migrant worker. No agency, but the ultimate responsibility of employer, which is a good thing.
Why is that a good thing from your point of view?
Well, because there must be a responsibility of those who really need workers and not for those who are the recruitment agency or working agency. So when something happens and migrants are not in possession of good contract or they're not given the right wage, then the employer says, well, you know, they're not my employees. They're employees of the recruitment agency. So now in the law it will be stated that the responsibility is with the employer, not with the agency.
The proposal also puts forward the idea of turning the foreign police into a civilian agency. Do you see
right. That
as having a practical effect on foreigners in the Czech Republic?
I would like to correct you a little bit. It is not going to be civil sort of authority. Alien police will be always alien police, but the numbers of policemen will be reduced and they will be put into the regions. But the permanent residency applications, and as well the long-term residency applications will be considered by Ministry of Interior, which is civilian sector.
And lastly, there's this idea of introducing a blue card for foreigners to authorize them for long-term residence in the Czech Republic,
right,
and to be employed here. What exactly is the purpose of that when, obviously, foreigners are already able to get residence and work here?
Blue card is a European issue, is a European topic. The Czech Republic introduced green card before, which has nothing to do with the American thing. The blue card says that there will be differences between highly educated or highly skilled migrants that will get the residency. And the only purpose is that it's going to be more quick, faster than the normal application for long-term stay for purpose of employment.
Christian Falvey was talking there to Lucia Slatkova from the International Organization for Migration. Coming up next, South Bohemia is in the grip of Moldavite fever. In addition to garnets, the Czech Republic can offer the world one other semi-precious stone found almost exclusively on its territory, a bottle green gemstone going by the name of Moldavite. There are currently four Moldavite mines operating in the Czech Republic, but rich deposits of the gem in southern Bohemia and the soaring prices of the stone have now attracted hordes of Moldavite hunters out to make a quick fortune. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
Dubbed the gemstone from the stars, Moldavite is thought to have formed from condensed rock vapours after a meteorite impact more than 20 million years ago. Rich deposits of it are scattered over South Bohemia, and it is not hard to come across the gem in its crude form. For years, the semi-precious stone left fortune seekers disinterested, but now that its market price has doubled, they're leaving no stone unturned in search of the greenish-brown gem. The deep spruce forest surrounding the town of Netolice, known to hold deposits of Moldavite, have been completely destroyed as hunters dig one deep hole after another, some of them 3 meters deep. The local authorities have asked the police for help, but officers say it is not in their power to stop the devastation. Milan Bajčura is from the local police department.
The area concerned is simply too extensive. It's not in our power to safeguard the entire region. All we can do is perform checks in the worst affected areas.
The digs are illegal, but apparently well worth the risk, since a good find amounts to 100,000 crowns on the black market, and the growing number of deep holes in the region suggests that hunters are not walking away empty-handed. However, unless they're actually caught with a gem, they have little to fear. Digging alone is treated as a misdemeanor. The mayor of Netolice, Oldřich Petrásek, says the only solution is to take over and mine the area legally.
This used to be one of our best forests. Now it resembles a moonscape. The only solution is to open up a mine here and mine the deposits legally, after which the land will be recultivated.
Putting this plan in motion is expected to take around 6 months. The town hall has already set the ball rolling, but until it has the required permits and selected a mining firm for the job, the green fever in South Bohemia is not likely to let up.
Thank you, Daniela Lazarova. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, broadcasting on shortwave, via the satellite and on the internet. In the next few minutes, we travel back in time to the Hittites' empire, which dominated a swath of the Near East for some 600 years. It was a vastly advanced civilization with better tools, more modern methods of warfare, and the newfangled commodity of iron. As is the way with empires, however, the Hittites collapsed, and all that the great trading civilization had recorded of its world was left in oblivion, until a Czech orientalist deciphered their forgotten language and became the first to hear their words in 3,000 years. This edition of Czechs in History by Christian Falvey is devoted to the father of Hittitology, Bedřich Hrozný.
The young Bedřich Hrozný was an outstanding student, well learned in some 10 languages, Semitic and European. He had proven his mettle in grueling archaeological expeditions in Turkey and Palestine, and had shown an aptitude for discovery after finding, translating, and publishing 5,000-year-old recipes for brewing Sumerian beer. These accomplishments proved the prerequisite to what was to become his greatest achievement, the decipherment of the Hittite language in 1915. J. Jazanov, a professor of Indo-European linguistics at Harvard University, is a leading scholar in Hittite language.
The Hittites were an ancient people of Asia Minor who were discovered rather late in the game. Their ancient capital was excavated at the very beginning of the 20th century, and it yielded an enormous trove of tablets written in the Hittite language. Now, the writing system they were written in was the cuneiform writing system of ancient Mesopotamia, the language, the writing system that the Babylonians used, for example. So we could sort of read the letters, the equivalent of the letters, which mostly stand for syllables, and some of the signs which stood for notions like king or land and things like that. But the language itself that was spelled out by these signs was completely unintelligible. It was a new language, one that we didn't know before. And Hrozný's achievement was to make sense of the language, to figure out what it was.
Either with miraculous timeliness or foreseeing the outbreak of war, Hrozný traveled to Istanbul to retrieve copies of the Hittite tablets, and upon return was promptly conscripted into the wartime Austrian army, where his fortunate post as a clerk allowed him ample time for decoding the writing. Working with texts from a Semitic region, Hrozný had hardly considered that the impenetrable language could have been of any other origin, until he began working with a particular set of rhymed lines that read as follows.
Nun in da an etzateni, vatar ma ekuteni.
At this point, Hrozný was inspired to follow a new train of thought. Recognizing the Babylonian sign for bread, ninda, he considered the probability of the next word, eza, to mean eat, and thus its potential as a cognate to the Greek edin, Latin edere, and German essen. Then seen like this, the other words leapt out, nu, now, watar, water, leaving Hrozný with his first successfully deciphered sentence, now you will eat bread and drink water. J. Jazanov again.
Critical passages where some of the context was known because the words were expressive of sense rather than phonetic signs. So, for example, the word for bread, the word for God, and so on were given. And he found a couple of contexts where he was able to make brilliant guesses as to what the surrounding context meant, and he plugged values into the words which proved to be correct and showed that Hittite was a member of the Indo-European language family. That's the family to which almost all the languages of Europe belong, as well as Sanskrit and its descendants in India and modern Persian. So he was able to establish that Hittite was another Indo-European language, and an extremely old one, like in fact older than Sanskrit and Greek and the other early members of the family.
And thus Bedřich Hrozný, whose name incidentally translates as Frederick Terrible, of the small town of Lysé nad Labem, came to be the only person in communion with a vanished Anatolian empire. He could read Hittite. The obvious question then remains, what did he read?
Význam Hittitů spočívá například v tom, že
the importance of the Hittites lay in part in their being equal partners and competitors of the Egyptian Empire, who were unknown until Bedřich Hrozný deciphered their language. Another thing we discovered thanks to the decipherment of Hittite was the Hittite Code of Laws, which we can say was progressive in comparison to other similar codes of the day, in that it imposed primarily monetary penalties or retribution, rather than punishments of death or mutilation, as was common at the time.
Ale vyskytovaly se zde tresty peněžní anebo tresty náhradou.
The Hittite Code of Laws was first published in 1922 by Hrozny himself, and his translation revealed a breathtakingly detailed treatment of crime and punishment from one of mankind's earliest sets of written law. With almost the same exhausting scrupulousness of modern law, the code regulated every aspect of life from the sacred to the banal. Since any list of what people must not do is a perfect indicator of what they actually do, Hrozny's translation of the Hittite legal code gave a vivid insight into the life of a society that had not been seen or heard of for more than 3 millennia.
If someone kills a person in a quarrel, the killer shall produce the body and give 4 people from his household in recompense, whether the slain person is a man or a woman. If a free man kills a snake while speaking another's name, he shall pay 40 shekels of silver. If the offender is a slave, however, he shall die. If someone injures a person and makes him ill, he shall care for him in his illness, and in his place he shall provide a person to work his estate while he recovers.
In addition to the priceless code of laws, the thousands of available Hittite tablets offered a trove of letters, personal and official, detailed instructions for religious ceremonies, and contracts, among business partners to be sure, but also among nations. They are some of the first international treaties known to history. One tablet from 1283 BC, specifying the terms of peace between the Hittites and the Egyptians under Ramesses II, is on display in the United Nations today as an example of one of the earliest known international peace accords. The Hittites proved to be avid and willing negotiators. Marek Ryktarzik of the Institute of Comparative Linguistics.
Once when a Hittite king was concluding a treaty with a vassal Caucasian state, so to speak, the king's daughter was married off as part of the treaty. But it was apparently necessary to contractually stipulate that there was to be no consorting of a sexual nature with the betrothed princess's sister. This was likely because polygamy was self-evident to the vassal state but forbidden by the Hittite code of laws, and so the Hittite king could not have allowed such an arrangement, and that had to be treated directly in the treaty.
Dámy a pánové, dnes seznámíme se s hlavními zásadami Kikulova systému.
The open door to a lost civilization took Hrozny's interests far afield. What you just heard is the professor speaking on Czech radio in 1932 on, quote, the tenets of Kikuli's system of horse training, a system used by the ancient Indo-European nations in the second millennium before Christ in the ancient Orient. Hrozny found his good fortune fading in the 1930s, however. He was vexed in his attempts at deciphering the writing systems of Crete and India and the hieroglyphic writing of the Hittites, and doggedly resisted the ultimately correct decipherments of his colleagues once they had beaten him to the punch. Again, however, he found himself in an important place at an important time in 1939, when he was appointed rector of Charles University prior to the German occupation and the closing of the universities that same year.
Bedřich Hrozny's personal bravery is attested to by an incident that occurred in 1939 when he had just become the rector of Charles University and faced off the invaders in the course of protecting the university. A group of students were hiding on the campus, and Bedřich Hrozny, whose language skills included impeccable German, warned the German officer in charge of finding them that they had no legal right to pursue the students on the campus. By doing this, he was able to protect the students for the time being.
Hrozny continued to teach privately throughout the occupation. However, a major stroke in 1944 left him unable to resume his academic duties following the liberation of Czechoslovakia in 1945. His work, however, remains critical to the study of the history, anthropology, and linguistics of the Near East, and to fields of European-wide significance today. Professor Jazanov again.
The discovery of Hittite meant that we found the oldest attested Indo-European language. There's a whole field which concerns itself with reconstructing the common parent of the Indo-European language family on the basis of its oldest descendants, and in that way tracing the history of all the languages, including the modern ones like English or French or Czech for that matter. And what Hittite did was supply another extreme extremely important early voice of testimony about what the parent language of the family looked like, so that the whole field of Indo-European linguistics has never been the same since Hittite was discovered.
That edition of Czechs in History by Christian Falvey, which was first broadcast in May this year, was the final part of our program today. For myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye. Thank you.